I think you need to think about like what it is that you want to address with whatever you're doing, and I think you need to look at like what exists and what doesn't exist, and how you can plug that gap. But I also think that the most important thing is about who you're going to go on that journey with. I think nothing ever can possibly happen in isolation. Like, I have an incredible team.
Welcome to the Power Hour, the weekly podcast that will motivate you to pursue your passion and to achieve success. I'm Adrienne Herbert, international speaker, fitness coach, Adidas global ambassador, and entrepreneur. Each week, I'll be talking to today's leading coaches, creatives, change makers, and innovators to find out their daily habits, morning routines, and rules to live by. The Power Hour is all about taking just 1 hour each day to help you improve your life and unlock your full potential. Whether you want to build a business, write a book, run a marathon, or maybe you're just looking for a spark of inspiration, the Power Hour is going to help you get there faster. Welcome back to the Power Hour podcast. Today's guest is a writer, producer, and model. She is the founder of the award-winning online and print magazine Galdem. She has collaborated with brands such as Google, Elle Magazine, and Bumble Biz. And in 2016, she was listed as one of the BBC's 100 women. We met earlier this year on set at a photo shoot for Elle Magazine, and I knew then that I had to invite her onto the show. So welcome to the studio, Liv Little.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming in.
This is so exciting.
It's so good to have you here. I mean, I've seen you everywhere the last couple of weeks. You're on every bus. You're on the underground. She's everywhere.
Yeah, I thought that was going to be much smaller than it was, and then it was huge.
Literally.
So that's been nice.
A 12-foot Liv Little. First up, now you do so many things these days, but I'd love to take it back to the start, to baby Liv Little. Have you always been a creative person? And growing up, who encouraged you and who nurtured that creativity?
Have I always been a creative person? It's interesting. I guess my mum seems to think that I've always been like a creative person, or always quite like a chatty person. And she said she could always imagine me going into some sort of media job because I would just talk from my buggy nonstop. My mum's also like a Buddhist. She's been a practicing Buddhist for 30 years now. And they have a special magazine called The Art of Living. And she said I used to sit in the editorial meetings looking really interested. But you know when mums say things and you're a bit like, is that really true? But I think from a young age, I have maybe had that, like, I don't know, entrepreneurial-ish spirit. And my mum has always kind of taught me to just go out there and try things, and you know, it's all right if not everything sticks or everything works in the first instant, but you know, you just got to give it a go. And I think I've always like been obsessed with documentary and like TV. I love kind of video programming. I love the radio. I love audio. And I think there are so many different ways that you can tell stories, and I think that's probably what inspired me to try lots of different things out.
And did you kind of seek that out then when you were younger? Because when you think about, say, for example, like even just like mainstream education, and you know, when you're talking about those things like media and audio, and it's almost like for some people, they don't know that that stuff exists.
Mm-mm. I mean, I guess it's, you know, what I was used to watching in the house, or like what I was used to hearing on the radio. Like, I don't know, Radio 4 would always be on. You sometimes hear like that, the Archer sound in the background or whatever. And my mum actually had like, she had gone to the National Film and Television School. She kind of ended up not doing that. She had me, and then like she couldn't do all the crazy hours and stuff. But I guess those things were there, but I might not necessarily have realised that those things were there in a like, in a big, big way. But I feel like those things slyly like penetrate your psyche, and then like you come full circle and you're like, oh wait, oh yeah, you know, I had like an auntie that worked at Amnesty, and like we were having certain conversations, or oh yeah, I had a mum that was really into film and TV. Oh yeah, that kind of makes sense. So yeah, it's always in hindsight, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure, that influence is there.
Yeah.
And I have heard you talk about your mum before and how...
A lot.
Yeah, a lot. That's great. And how she would encourage you to take up space and to use your voice, and that your voice was important. Mm. So how did she do that? And when did you first become aware of things like social privilege and how that would impact you as a woman of colour?
I think it was always so important for her, and you know, for my nan and for everyone, for my dad as well. Like my dad left school when he was 11 or 12, and my mum went to schools where she was always told that she was like not smart enough because she was a black child. She like suffered like overt racism in a way which is, you know, was very different to my experiences now. Mm. And I think she really wanted to make sure that I think being in those environments in which you're told that like you're not enough, you're not worthy, you're not smart, you're not intelligent, all of these things, I think it can kind of like lead to a lack of confidence. And for me and for my little sister who's 13, who's like so confident, she's so sassy. She's rude to me a lot of the time. But I think she really wanted us to just to feel free and to feel as though, you know, our voices mattered, and she, you know, she really wanted to put us in like educational environments in which maybe we weren't surrounded by that many people who like look like us, but to understand that those voices of privilege who have been like socialized to think that they're going to govern this world, that their voice isn't the only one that matters. And because of that, she's always been like, you have to use your privilege, you have to use like the education that you've that I made sure that you had to like give voice to other people. She's like, you got to use it, you got to work. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm trying, I'm working. But that was like, that was very deliberate on her part. And, you know, she kind of has given everything to her children.
Wow, that's incredible. Mm. And do you think, I guess, being in that environment, as you said, where maybe not everybody, you know, you might have felt that kind of feeling of being the only, do you feel like that, I guess, over time helps you to build confidence and resilience to use your voice in any space?
I think so. I think it can kind of do two things. I think like at school, yes, you know, definitely you can do whatever you want to do. I think as you kind of get older, go to university, it became like another level of kind of microaggressions and just people that held views that were so kind of far removed and so like conservative in comparison to like the person that I am, that then it became like, oh my God, this is really overwhelming. And it kind of knocked, I feel like at that point, it kind of knocked my confidence so much to the point that I felt really, as someone who's always been like relatively optimistic and able to find solutions, I just felt really down. And it took me a little while. It took me maybe the process of a year to think, okay, what can I do to like lift up myself and my happiness and also hopefully connect with other people? And, you know, there's like a ripple effect. But it took a minute and I just was like, I can't be here. I can't like operate in this space. Like, I didn't feel fully prepared because I'd grown up in London with like, obviously a black family, like around black children, and like as much as maybe the educational environment that I had didn't like mirror that, I had that support network, I had that thing around me. And then you move to a different city and it's just like, I don't know, it was just a lot. It was a lot.
Yeah, it's overwhelming for sure. And I think when you describe then like that kind of feeling of down and feeling, you know, that it took a year, I can kind of relate to that, thinking about how, I don't know, sometimes it feels maybe overwhelming. Do you know what I mean? To think, you feel helpless to change because you're like, this is such a big thing that there's so many layers to this that no matter how empowered you are or you feel like you have this inside you, you're like, there's no way like I can possibly.
Where do you start?
Yes.
Where do you start? You're like, well, the system is as it is. Like, try not to swear. The system is what it is. Like, the institution is what it is. The curriculum is what it is. The demographic of lecturers is what it is. The demographic of students is what it is. And it's just a lot. And then you're expected to be the voice, the face, the person that can speak on, like, what all black people supposedly think. It was just it was a whole mess. That's at that time, it was a whole mess.
It's a lot. So that was in Bristol. So you studied in Bristol and you originally started Galdem when you were in Bristol, right? Yeah. So I think people think that like everything happens in London, like London is the place. And I mean, I've felt like that in the past, like everything happens here. So I guess, can you tell us, how did you even start Galdem? What was the reason for starting it? Did you ever expect it to grow to what it's become now?
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, that idea of London is the be all and end all of creativity, that needs to go. And I think in the work that I'm doing, we're constantly trying to like counter that, even though we're like a London based business, and most of the work that I do within Galdem and also outside of Galdem tends to be quite London focused in terms of like our events and different things. We're just like, okay, how much of this can we not do here? Because it's not the only place. And the thing is, as much as I had like a really, really awful time being in Bristol, it wasn't all bad, by the way. There were points when it was felt particularly bad. But at the end of my time at Bristol, like as Galdem had launched, I was made aware of the amazing creative community and like people of colour that were just like doing amazing work in the city. And I wish I'd like found them earlier on, because we had Uncle Nikesh with the Good Immigrant and just doing bits for everyone. We had Clem, who was like, I think she was like the mayor at some point. We had all these amazing people who were like Edson Burton, this poet and historian, who were there. And like, because it was like a smaller place, people like were really supportive and really like nurtured each other in a way that maybe Galdem wouldn't have been able to have grown like as quickly, or maybe with that same kind of like real community support that we had in Bristol. Maybe it wouldn't have happened like as quickly as it did, or in the same way. I don't know. The how and the why, sadness, feeling like if I can't connect with people, I feasibly just cannot, you know, continue. And I think a lot of people have that same experience in university. It's so not unique. I hear so many people talk about it all the time. You know, we get so many pictures about that specific topic. And then it was a kind of a case of like figuring out what it should look like. And like I said, I'd always like been really interested in media, journalism, but mainly like I said, documentary. But all of that is the aim of that is all to tell people's stories. And a way that you can tell people's stories quickly, freely, easily is through like having a publishing platform. And so that made sense. And then it was kind of, there was a few logistical things which my mum helped me with again. and then it was just about connecting with people. And that is really as simple as it was in the beginning. It's much more complicated now.
I can only imagine. But I mean, it's huge what you've created, and it doesn't seem to be slowing down anytime soon. Mm. So what advice would you give to anyone who's listening to this and maybe who follows you online, who sees what you do and thinks, okay, I have this creative idea too, but maybe they don't know where or how to get started? That's often what I hear from people. It's not that they don't have ideas or they don't have passion or inspiration. Everyone does. And I actually truly believe everyone has something, but they just either don't know where to get started, or yeah, something holds them back.
It's interesting because it's not as though like I necessarily set out to be like, I'm going to create like a business, and you know, those things kind of naturally followed. I think you need to think about like what it is that you want to address with whatever you're doing, and I think you need to look at like what exists and what doesn't exist, and how you can plug that gap. But I also think that the most important thing is about who you're going to go on that journey with. I think nothing ever can possibly happen in isolation. Like, I have an incredible team of people who are just so committed. We did this brainstorming session to kind of like really hammer home what the values of the company were, and everyone is on the same page, and that's so like encouraging and like affirming to see and to talk about. But I do think it's about, you know, kind of rallying together the right troops. Depends on what the project is. But I think I feel like when something needs to happen, like, you know, it's not really a case of just thinking, oh, you know, I kind of want to start a business, so like what could I do? Mm-hmm. I think it needs to come from something deeper than that, mm-hmm. In my perspective anyway.
And did you need, I guess, like funds to do it? Do you need, you know,
I mean, that would be nice. We didn't have funds for a long time though. Yeah. I remember applying for some uni funding and like just a little bit, small couple hundred quid, didn't get it. And then, you know, like I say, it was just paying for hosting and the website in the first instant. And then obviously as it grows, yes, you know, now like it's like a full-time job for all of us and everything's paid for. But it takes a while to get to that point. And I think also it's possible. Everything is possible. Reach out to people, ask questions, find people who have been in a similar position to you, because, and this is not to be like super like negative or anything, but we know in terms of the landscape of business and getting funding, if you are someone who looks like me, it's just not as easy as if you were like a middle-aged, middle-class white man. It's different, right? And you have to prove yourself in different ways. So just make sure you have that network that can back you up, and you find people that have been in that position before, because it's not easy.
Yeah, Yeah, no, that's brilliant. And you mentioned about the team now. So as you said, you didn't necessarily start with that team, but as the team has grown, you know, you mentioned about the brainstorming and how did you, I guess, well, how do you continue to keep the essence of what you started originally as that team grows? And where did you even find the team?
So actually quite a lot of people that are in the team now were there from day one. So Shanice, who's our social media manager, head of social, she was there literally from day one, Shanice. Same with like Charlie, Nye, like quite a few people were. And then a few people have joined along the way, which is like, which is great. Marielle was there from very early on too.
How many is in the team now?
So there are like, on the busiest day, which is a Thursday, there are 10 of us. Yeah. But then on most days there's around like 5 or 6. So everyone kind of has different working days, which is interesting. I want to get it to the point where everyone's in all the time, obviously. But, you know, baby steps. But yeah, it was interesting. I think Nayella, who's our head of lifestyle, like I'd actually is the only person that I knew before Galdem. And she, we like would just be getting up to naughty things together when we were like teenagers. And then Charlie, I remember reading like an article of hers about dating, being mixed race on Tinder. And like we were all like, oh my God, wow, she's like a proper journalist. And then she came and we met her, and then the rest is kind of history. But I think it was like through the internet really that most of us came together, and like none of us knew each other before.
I think that's really encouraging, I think, for sometimes people to hear, because I know people sometimes they assume, they say, well, I don't know anyone in that, or I don't know. And, you know, I think maybe the fear of like reaching out and, you know, kind of rejection. But as you said, social media now is so powerful.
If
you put the time in and the work in, and you really kind of, you know, you're not going to get, you know, replies from everyone, or you might not get a yes from everyone. But I think the more you reach out and try, that's certainly in my experience,
you
for example, like
people.
Yeah, like with this podcast, like, you know how many people are asked to be on this podcast? Because I'm like, I want to have that conversation. Yeah. Maybe I don't know you personally, but I know the work that you do. And I, you know, I feel like if you're afraid to reach out, as you said, you can't do things in isolation. You can't do it on your own.
I remember actually like one of my first job internships, the woman said that I literally like forced her to give me the job. Like I just like harassed her. It was for like a women's rights organization, and I think you do have to have a little bit of that. And in the beginning I would send so many emails, or I'd pitch, and like people just wouldn't respond, and slowly, you know, now people do respond. But yeah, it definitely takes a while. You have to have like, you have to have patience, and you have to like,
and persistence.
Man, yeah, you have to be okay with the fact that like you'll probably get a lot of doors slammed in your face along the way, and that's not nice, but it's not like, it's not necessarily personal. Sometimes people, they're just not ready. They will be ready, but they're not ready, or they think they're ready. But yeah, no, a lot of persistence. And but I do also think that with this, when it first started, a lot of people were like quite interested by it, because a lot of people were feeling the same and as though something like this should exist. So it wasn't like a real stretch to have people like be intrigued by what we were doing.
Yeah, well, there was a need, right?
There was
so when,
a need,
when you said about what exists and what doesn't exist, you know, Galdem does an incredible job of highlighting important conversations and inviting people to share their stories, specifically sharing the perspectives from women and non-binary people of colour. So what has the response been like from that community?
I mean, our community, we wouldn't exist without our community. So like everything that we do is with our community in mind, like every project, every brand work, every piece of content, that's what we're thinking about is, you know, how are we platforming voices? Who are we working with? Can we work with more people? Let's not just work with the same voices, et cetera, et cetera. And like the response, it's been wild. Like it's been amazing and incredible. And people hold us to account, and people feel comfortable to like ask us challenging questions and vice versa. And I think that's really healthy. I think it's been great. It's beautiful. Like just even just to like the online stuff is amazing as well, but for me, like I am someone that like thrives off of being around other people. Like I really like people's company. I'm not very good at being on my own, and there's something so beautiful about doing an event or like just being in a room and looking around. And if your day-to-day isn't like that, to be in a room and look around and see, you know, black people, brown people, like all of these people just existing in a space, I think that's so powerful, and that stuff really does move you. I remember when we did our first V&A takeover and like 5,000 people came. I remember just crying and being like,
5,000 people?
Yeah, it was crazy. Just being like, oh my God, like, okay, so all these people, they existed on the internet, but they like really are here. They're really here for like the work that we're doing, like, and we're all like kind of in this together. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, it's been amazing. And I think people, I think people like the fact that they kind of know who like the team behind Galdem is. They like, they can see faces that like maybe look a little bit like theirs. And I think that is a reason why people also like connect with it and what we're doing. You know, we're like, as much as we're running a business, we're also, I'm 25. Most of the team is like in their mid 20s, figuring out how like to navigate these things, how to be an editor, how to like run a business. It's the first time. It's the first time that all of us have done this. And I think, you know, we're very like open with that. It's like we're learning as we're going. And our audience is learning and growing. And I think that's great. So yeah, it's been amazing. If I think about it too much, like I will just cry.
It's mad. It's so interesting and like how powerful that community is. And as you said, because I don't know, I feel like the community they feel like they have some ownership over it too. You know, as you said, it's like it's very two way. It's like contribution, but also seeing people like yourself, and like you said, they might be, you know, similar faces, but also similar age, similar, just they can actually relate to who you are and what you're talking about. And it's interesting because I now see, I'm sure you do as well, in the last, say, year or two, the way brands and like commercial things are now trying to be like, okay, like it's all about community. We have to create this community to sell this product, or we have to create this community to, you know, make our brand have, you know, a better kind of voice or whatever. And it's interesting because what you've created is essentially what people now are just trying to monetize. They're trying to like, because they see the power, they see the kind of the collective movement, the energy, like you can't, nothing can replace it.
No, you can't.
You can't.
The thing is that, you know, people, the story of Galdem, right? It's fair, like people know it. People like they understand where it came from. They see where it came from. They know the people that have like shaped the business. They like.
There's no agenda.
There's no. Yeah, they like and they like the growth is organic, right? You cannot. There's no way that you can just kind of like come in and try to establish a thing and like run away again. That's not really how it works. You know, so when we work with brands, you know, we're thinking about, okay, what is the payoff for our audience? What is the long-term relationship here? Those are conversations that we're having all the time. Is this genuine? Like, you know.
Yeah, well, that's the thing right now, isn't it? So I actually do some consulting for brands and, you know, the thing about authenticity and is it genuine? And I think it's hard for both sides to navigate. And especially, I think, for individuals or small organisations that maybe, you know, I'll be honest, they want those brand partnerships. They want to work with this brand, this brand. They want to, you know, they want to cash a check. They want to do those things. And it's not to say you shouldn't, but I guess, yeah, how do you... What would you advise people to do if they're in a place now where it's like, okay, they have created something and people are starting to take notice and say, let's work together. Let's, you know, we can do this event or we can pay this, but we want you to, you know, look at, share this press release or whatever. Like, how do you do that?
Because it's interesting because I've, like, as an individual, I've, like, done some work with brands, obviously, and then also, like, as a business, we work with brands. I think you... So, I mean, it's to be fair, it's, like, it's not the same process because, like, it's a business and there's lots of people behind it. Whereas with me, I think on a personal level, I think about brands who I am happy to work with. I think about brands whose ethos, like, I am happy to get behind. I think about brands, I have brands that I categorically won't work for. And I probably say no to like 80% of stuff I'm asked to do because it doesn't sit right with me. And I think you have to set your own standards as to what you're going to be able to sleep with at night, like, and feel like, okay, cool, yeah, I can back that, I did that, that's all right, harmless, fine, or yeah, you know, I really believe in this campaign. Just never do anything if your gut is like, then you just probably shouldn't do it. And it's interesting because sometimes you'll say no and you might see other, you know, people pick up the same jobs and you're like, interesting, I wouldn't have thought like the values, but you know, you never know like the reasons behind people like needing to do brand work.
At the end of the day, but
in terms of business wise, yeah, you have to have your ethics in place. You have to, like, that's why we do like quite a lot of like return, like repeatable work with people that we really get on with. Again, think about the payoff for your community. The thing is with media, it's hard, isn't it? Because like in terms of revenue, like a lot, and to be honest, with a lot of kind of the contemporary businesses that like a lot of my peers have set up. You work with brands, and that is, you know, part of the way that you pay for your team and you pay for projects and different things. So yeah, you just have to, you have to find that kind of like middle ground and see what it is that you feel comfortable with. And we're always, you know, having conversations around the office like, good, like, okay, no, this doesn't sit well with us because of this. Okay, so we won't do that. But yeah, I feel like the boundaries, I feel like the kind of like lines are constantly shifting, and you're constantly kind of having to look at your own like ethical policy and figure out what works. And I think, do you know what? You do things, you can't take things back. So you just have to really, really, really consider it and have your key kind of markers or points that you need to be satisfied with before you can move forward in working with someone, I think.
Yeah, for sure. When I was speaking last week, actually, on a panel event, there's a guy on the panel who was saying exactly that about kind of he actually described it. What word did he use? I was literally like, that sums it up completely. Oh my goodness. He described kind of, you know, this whole digital era that we're living in as eternal. And what he meant was like, he's like, if you share something now and someone's like, you try and get it removed or you try and get it taken down. He said even the London Met Police sometimes cannot get something removed, even when it comes to a matter of, you know, whatever, safety, whatever. He's like, they can't even, the whole of the London.
The internet is scary. It's eternal. Beautiful, but it's also mad.
Yeah, and so when he learned that, he said he was young at the time, when he learned that.
I'd learned that when I was young.
Right?
I'm just like, photos of me going out with my, and I'm like, those do not need to be on the line. But, yeah, it's interesting.
I think for young people to hear that and like, you know, because I do think there's this kind of, you know, careless. You do have that, right? If you're, I don't know, a teenager, you're very young, like, you know,
thinking
whatever.
About, I actually don't think people should really be tapping into people's personal social media when you're applying for a job and like trying to see like whether they like had one too many drinks in that photo. I don't really think. And I've heard of people where they're employed, like, been at interviews and people have referenced, oh, I saw this on your Facebook. That to me is a massive invasion of privacy. We know that these things aren't very private anyway, really, realistically.
It's, when you're young though, you don't consider 10 years time, 20. Yeah, you don't care. That's the point. You don't care. If someone says to you, when you're 25 or when you're 30, you're thinking, what? Like when I'm old, you know, like literally, I remember, like, I'm 32 now. I remember thinking when I was like 17 that 32 was dead. Like,
yeah, you are literally. Busted. I can't even imagine it. My sister, I'm 25, my sister's 13, and she thinks I'm old. And I'm like, are you okay?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I think, they need to consider this the thought of what you're putting out and what you're saying yes to and what you're saying, like, you know, even if it's the start.
I also think it's very dangerous to kind of like, and we live in this kind of like culture now where if someone has had a thought when they were like 10 and like they talk it 20 years on, 10 years on, they don't share those beliefs. They, you know, they were young. They don't, it wasn't a great thing to say, whatever, but that gets drawn up and then there's a headline and it's this person thinks this and you know full well that that isn't out. I think, you know, the lines are just so blurry. It's a whole mess.
Yeah, I mean, you'd be terrified to say anything, let alone all the things I've probably said on this show. So
you're all right, I think.
So for you personally, you know, the work that you do inspires so many people and just being who you are, using your voice, being in the space. But do you have any role models that inspire you both, or either personally or professionally?
Yeah, do you know what? There are so many people who I look up to. If I'm talking in terms of literature, then like Roxane Gay, literary icon, amazing. Just amazing, matter of fact way of articulating thoughts. Candice Carty-Williams, amazing again, like Queenie, very matter of fact way of like articulating issues that a lot of us could kind of relate to, so beautiful. Michaela Cole didn't see herself on screen, literally wrote herself into existence with chewing gum. Iconic, amazing. Rennie, like, I could go on. And no, there's a pattern here as well, isn't there? I'm like, but yeah, I could go on. Kelechi, like fitness mogul, like amazing. Again, very matter of fact, just says it like it is.
We're going to need a list.
There were just
we need a reading list.
I know. I'm like, oh, there are so many people in so many levels. But I think, especially in terms of me first getting into television, because that's what, like, where I had my kind of formal training. Seeing like a Michaela Cole was like so powerful for me. But yeah, all of these people, Charmaine Lovegrove, publishing, amazing, like carving out space. Like she does it in her own way, how she wants to do it. And she's very like unwavering in that. She's very determined, like love her. So yeah, there are just so many people. And I meet and I get to work with so many of these people all the time. And they're so cool and so smart and so accomplished and so like kind and like compassionate and open and Mum wrote like all of these people. I'm just like, wow, yeah, that's amazing.
It's incredible that they're all, as you said, there are so many and they're all there, and if you seek you will find, you know. Yeah. And it's kind of like seeing them, but also
it's a different time. Yeah, 100%
for sure.
100%.
It's exciting. So I want to talk to you about the Power Hour. This is the Power Hour show. I love to find out what gets people out of bed in the morning, what makes them excited for the day, what makes them inspired, and what's kind of kept them going on the journey that they're on. So could you tell us, Liv, I know a bit about this, so I'm not going to say anything, but I want to know about your morning routine. So what time you generally get up in the morning and what the first hour of your day is like.
First hour. Do you know what? So historically speaking, I would tend to wake up a mere 30 minutes before I need to leave the house. I have no hair. I don't really like, I've just got some basic like balm on my face, whatever. Unless I've got like a really fancy meeting where I feel like whatever I need to look awake for or cover my bags for. But generally, I'm just like a get up and go kind of person. What I am trying to do now and actually give myself that full hour before I go to work. Yesterday I did half an hour of yoga, spent the other half an hour getting ready, showering.
Hair is a game changer.
No hair is amazing. It's just so easy. But I think for me, I'm now trying to just have some time in the morning to just like get in my body, to feel my body a little bit more. And I think when I do that, I feel like I have more energy. Like yesterday, I felt great because I did that 30 minutes of yoga and I really stretched it all out and I just had a minute to think and to breathe. But I can also just get up and run.
Yeah, which is great. But do you have any, I guess on the flip side of that, do you have any non-negotiables in the morning? Do you have anything that you actively avoid that you know is going to kind of, yeah, I guess throw you off in the morning?
Oh, interesting. One thing that I try not to do, and my girlfriend's very much like, don't look at your phone straight away. I'm like, okay. Is not to look at my phone straight away. Not to go straight into like looking at emails, because they can wait until you get in most of the time.
Would you go to emails before you'd go to social? Because I think a lot of people, they go to their phone to social.
I'd go to emails first.
Oh, you see, that's interesting. Yeah. No, seriously, everyone says they pick up their phone, they go to social media, and they kind of, what have I missed whilst I've been asleep? You know, they're looking at everyone.
I'm thinking about what emails I've missed.
Okay.
But yeah, so that kind of thing. And it's important to set boundaries for yourself and for other people. I think if people think that you're the kind of person, and I used to be this person that replied to anything at any hour of the day, at any time, on the loo, wherever I was, then that they would expect that level of communication, which is dangerous in itself, right? So you need to set your boundaries. Actually, I'm going to reply between these hours and, you know, only in exceptions will I deviate from this. I think that's really important. But yeah, try not to look at a phone. Definitely. Sometimes I chant, like I was obviously like raised in a Buddhist household, so sometimes I will chant. I like normally go to that when I'm already stressed, and it's about building those things into your daily practice rather than just doing them when you're ready to crumble. But we're still figuring it out, you know?
Yeah, of course.
Still learning.
Of course. Well, brilliant. And do you have a Power Hour challenge for our listeners? So each week I ask the guests to encourage us to try something that maybe they haven't considered before. Mm-mm. And I know we were speaking off mic before the show started recording about just how we're feeling this morning with it being kind of grey. It's October. Yeah. I know personally I'm mourning the summer. I am mourning it right now. So yeah, do you have a challenge for us?
Do you know what a challenge? Do you know what is actually quite a good challenge? I don't know if this kind of necessarily rates the first hour of your day, but like leave your phone out your bedroom, buy an alarm clock, wake up with your alarm clock, and so you're not looking at your phone like as soon as you wake up. Give yourself at least half an hour when you have then woken up before you start checking in on all sorts of stuff. You can shower, you can get ready first, and then once you're awake, once you're feeling a bit fresher, then you can look at what you need to look at. But try and keep that digital stuff out of your bedroom.
Yeah, and away from your actual physical body. I heard this thing the other day that apparently our mobile devices are always within 1 meter of our physical body all the time, 24 hours a day. And I started to think about it. I was like, really? But then you think if it's like in your pocket, or if it's next to you on the table, or if you're on a flight, or everywhere you go now, like, when do you think I'm going to put my phone in another room or in a bag? It's like always 1 meter away from you.
Yeah. No, it's, I used to be way more glued to my phone than I am now. And now when I'm having my evenings or whatever, you have to be all right with putting it in the other room, putting it away, just having your time. Oh, like, good for the relationship as well.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, that would be an interesting challenge.
Yeah, get the phone away from your body for a half an hour.
But yeah, whoa.
Awesome, I know. Right, so before I ask you my closing question, I would love it if you could tell everyone where they can find you online and in real life, actually, if you have any events coming up.
Oh, cute. Events.
Ooh. Well, how about online first?
Yeah, I'm like, do I have anything happening right now? If you want to find me online, I am just Liv Liddle. If you want to find Galdem online, it is Galdem Zine, so GALDEMZINE, and the website is GAL-DEM.com. I'll just be about, probably, at some events. I can't think of anything that's coming up. But yeah, find me on socials and then you'll find out where I'm going to be.
Amazing. Thank you, Liv. And so my closing question for you today is all about time. Mm. I'm kind of obsessed with this concept and I love hearing people's, I guess, like, take on time. Mm-mm. I value it so much. I think it's the most important thing that we can give to another person and share. So thank you for sharing your time with us today.
Thank you as well.
So along the way, what is the most valuable thing that time has taught you?
I feel as though the most valuable thing that I've learned about time is the value of time, actually. And I think understanding the value of, like, my time in particular has enabled me to really figure out how I want to spend that time. And it's made me be okay with saying no a lot more. So I think that is something that, and that is very powerful in itself, the ability to say no. Actually, that is not going to lead me to the next point that I need to be at, or I'm just not interested in that, or I shouldn't feel guilty, or I shouldn't feel like I have to do it because it's someone that I know or whatever. So yeah, power of no related in relation to time, I think. Yeah,
wonderful. Hear it, people. No is a full sentence.
No,
yeah, no is a sentence. As you said, it doesn't have to be followed up with an excuse.
Yeah, in it.
A reason.
Oh, I'm really, really sorry. Actually, yeah, I'm not available, and that's fine.
No.
No.
Full stop.
No.
I'm going to practice that this week. That's going to be my challenge.
Okay, good.
Say no. Say no. Brilliant. Thank you so much,
Liv. Thank you so much.
I have really, really enjoyed this conversation.
I've loved it.
And if you've enjoyed listening to it, then please do share it with a friend, put it on social, whatever you think that anyone who would love to hear this chat. And don't forget, you can rate and review us on iTunes, all of that good stuff. It really helps to grow the show. Thank you so much for listening. See ya.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started. Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.